Hi, my name is Gloria. Welcome to the Importance of Working All 12 Steps workshop. Please help me open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Today we will be talking about Step 3. We will be referring to the AA Big Book and the OA 12 and 12 primarily. There will be time at the end of the workshop for sharing. This workshop is being recorded and will be posted on the OA website podcast page as well as other podcast feeds like iTunes. If you speak, it is considered implied consent to have your voice and your share recorded and posted. To preserve your anonymity, please use only your first name or a fictitious name when you share.
My name is Neil, and I am a compulsive eater, and I am from Baltimore. I've been in Overeaters Anonymous for 25 years. I went to my first meeting on February 18th, 1990. I became abstinent and stayed abstinent for a period of time, but for most of the first 4 or 5 years of my time in program, it was a different kind of abstinence that I have now, in the sense that I was still kind of willfully picking up every now and then. I had a little bit of a blurry bottom line. So around 5 years in, I started working a fairly structured program, tightened up my food plan, and I consider myself continually abstinent since January 30th of 1996. So I had my 19th anniversary, and I'm maintaining about a 30-pound weight loss. So when I was asked to be one of the speakers for this Step 3 meeting, I did what I usually do, which is I say yes when people ask me to do service, and I began to think about what I wanted to talk about and how significant this particular step is to me. You know, I grew up, my earliest memories of eating, relief eating, were when I was a young child. You know, typically camped in front of the TV set. I think I ate for emotional relief. I grew up feeling very emotional, very sensitive, you know, kind of overwhelmed by my feelings. I cried easily. I don't know if it was fear or what it was, but I found that to be a very difficult thing to grow up with. It just seemed like after a while, like I was just broken, like there was just something deeply wrong with me. I was ashamed of that, and I felt like I couldn't let anybody know, so I just had this feeling of being unworthy, and so relief eating was really a natural next step for me. It was just very tiring to just be me. So I'd be camped in front of the TV and eating, and, you know, I think that was kind of like a double whammy, because not only was I eating to dull my feelings, but I was also engaged in, you know, kind of zoning out. Fantasy is one of the things that my mind would do to escape. That took many different forms. I came into program because of my emotions. I actually came into OA through another 12-step program. I came into that program when I was 29 years old, having been not only eating compulsively, but more or less getting high in some way, shape, or form for the previous 12 years, just about on a daily basis. So I came into that program, and I was in that program for about a year and a half, and I met a woman. I actually came into that program through a woman that I was seeing. It seemed like God seemed to help me to find my way by helping me through the women that I was dating at the time. And so I found AA through that person and ultimately became involved with a woman who came into AA and OA in 1985. And when the time came in 1990 for me to come in, she was there to encourage me in that direction, which is what I did. But I came in because I was really emotionally very depressed. There was a lot of resentment and a lot of, you know, feelings that everything that I had learned in the previous 7 years were not working anymore. I was still very guarded and very tightly wrapped. You know, a lot of the old feelings that I had when I first started using were coming back. You know, in a lot of ways, I felt like life wasn't fair. I wasn't getting what I wanted. Of course, you know, I had incessant demands, so even if I got what I wanted, I was never satisfied anyhow. So the things were being taken away from me. I had this tremendous sense of entitlement. So I worried. I worried. I tried to control things. I would dwell on negative possible outcomes. You know, I expected disappointment. And so I was operating out of fear and in a kind of a survival mode. You know, I was doing things impulsively, and there was really no order and no balance, and trust didn't come easy to me. And as a result, I acted impulsively, and I wasn't particularly concerned about the consequences of my actions. And when you live your life that way, the wreckage piles up, and I think the shame over the and the regret piles up with it as well. So when I got into OA, which was really just kind of divine providence anyhow, I think it was kind of a convergence of enough pain, enough temporary willingness, and my higher power working in my life. You know, I was told that if I was a compulsive overeater, that I would benefit from putting boundaries around my food and incorporating daily positive actions, which were the tools. And they would constantly remind me that, you know, in some fundamental way, that I was out of step with the world. And if I wanted to learn new ways of reacting to life and new ways of interpreting the signals that I thought the world was sending me, I just had to stick with my plan that not eating a day at a time, which is still really the most important thing for me as a food addict, I have a spiritual dimension to my life. I have a relationship with a higher power, but I came to that as a direct result of being abstinent. And while there may be people who can get by or can thrive just with a relationship with a higher power, I have to work my program. I can't take anything for granted. If I put myself at risk when I am in relationship with food, I can lose everything that I have, and I would be very disinterested in working as diligently to remain consciously in contact with my higher power if I was not abstinent. So to me, a day of abstinence is just as important, if not more, than it was when I first came in. So I was told, stick with the plan. But see where my life was out of balance, where my expectations were causing me trouble. And I was not of sound mind, I was told, and that I had to find an external source of power to help me if things were going to change. And I needed to develop a personal working relationship with that power to let it know me and for me to begin to trust it. And that's where step three came in. You know, step three was the beginning of a journey that involved being okay with not having to have the answers, okay to be needy. And most importantly, it was just coming to believe that I could ask for help. And in a general way, I didn't have to say, God, do this, but I could say, God, I don't know how to do this. And let me just sit still and know that no matter how things go, it's going to be okay. And that was a big thing for me, because I think learning to sit still when I was going through things that made me uncomfortable was something that I did not develop any skills for prior to coming into the program. If I felt uncomfortable, I became impulsive, I became impatient, and then I just acted out of survival mode, and that was not a winning strategy. So the operative words in step three were to make a decision. I had to become an active participant in this process of working with a higher power and invest in that relationship. I had to let go of the illusion that I was in control, and when I began to do that, I could see the value in not getting what I wanted. Maybe God just wanted to put me in a situation and to observe what was going on around me and to stop operating on automatic pilot. That if I sat still and I took some time, I could learn things that I wasn't learning when I was acting more impulsively. So one of the things that was said to me early on when I said, well, what does it mean to turn my will and my life over to the care of God? And someone says, well, you know, your will is your thoughts. You know, it's what your mind is telling you. And your life is the actions that you take. That was pretty good. And another thing that was a little confusing was that I wasn't turning my will over to God. I was turning it over to the care of God. And that was pretty important for me, because I realized that I had to have a conception of a higher power that had my best interests at heart. It cared about me. It was a benevolent power that wanted me to progress and succeed and to grow and evolve. And I don't know that I ever had that notion of a higher power. I could believe in kind of, you know, galactically powerful being that built, you know, created a complex world and made it go. But I don't know that I believe that I had a higher power that cared about what was going on with me and how much food I ate and stuff like that. And I know that there were a lot of people that are intimidated by this stuff. Yeah, I had to start working from the direction of you know, did my old ways of being where I didn't have a higher power, did that ever bring me happiness or serenity? Did the ways that I dealt with life ever bring me the results that I wanted on a consistent basis? And when the answer kept being no, then it was like, well, what do I have to lose? You know, I can just start asking this higher power to give me the ability to tolerate the stresses and the pressures of my life, especially when things weren't going my way. I didn't have to know how everything was going to turn out. And by developing the muscle memory that comes when you have a plan of eating and you work with an action plan and, you know, I do things in small incremental steps and I break down my day into smaller parts and work back from the results I wanted, I found that I was able to have a level of order in my life that I never had before. And that doing esteemable acts one day at a time builds integrity and character and self-confidence. And you know, that began to come with me along with the ability to trust this higher power. You know, I began to believe that more would be revealed if I was participating, if I was committed to my abstinence, and I was trying to be the best OA member that I could be. And I was told very early on to get active in program, and service is really a part of my story. And that helped put me in touch with other people that were very committed to working the program, and they all had a spiritual dimension, and they talked about God and their higher power, and it was an active relationship. And that reinforced that for me in a very positive way. So as I moved away from impulsive thinking and more into, you know, planning my day and organizing my thoughts, this was really a bold concept. I could make a decision to run my best thinking past God. And of course, you know, I should say that I've always had a close relationship with my sponsor since I've been abstinent. And anything that was important to me or anything that I was involved with or confused about, I would run past my sponsor. But before taking action, I could make a decision to run my best thinking past my God as I understood him, and then wait before implementing my master plan. Because I found out that bad ideas really are revealed to be pretty bad almost immediately. And so that I didn't have to wait long, and that a good idea would wait. It would wait for me, and it would still be there when I got there. You know, I could see if my ideas held up under scrutiny. So one thing I could say for sure is that step three has saved me from more disastrous decisions than any other single aspect of my program, other than not picking up the first compulsive bite, no matter what. And nothing is more important to me than that. Abstinence is the engine that drives the whole operation, keeps me willing. You know, my ability to not say the first thing that comes into my head reveal that there are entire alternate universes out there in that space between my thoughts and my actions. And if I put God in there, it gives him a chance to emerge. And as this process became more grooved, I really began to give credit to my higher power for helping me to see these alternate scenarios. I just had to do my part. I had to make a decision to let him show me. A couple of things that have come to me as a result of working step three is I could run into a snag in my master plans, and I could shift gears. I could be pragmatic and come up with an alternate plan without getting too flustered about the whole thing. And I also realized that if I wasn't sure what to do, that I could slow down and just be still for a while, and God would let me see new options. Inspiration came to me when I learned to trust God and to turn my will and my life over. The OA 12 and 12 talks beautifully about intuition being returned, and I have experienced that and believe it to be true. I learned to become a more flexible person. The more that I was able to trust God with my life and my will, the more I was able to see that there were other people that hadn't found this gift, and that I knew that they were operating under the same kind of frustration that I used to, and it enabled me to be a little bit more compassionate. You know, one of the most important things that happened as a result of working step three is that I was given the ability to see what I was going to need in order to take step four in a searching and fearless way. I was experiencing so much change and so much freedom from being able to take life in stride that I was willing to shine the light on some of the areas of my life that were pretty problematic for me. I learned how to take life in stride, that I could take little bites out of life and I didn't have to chase after it and take big honking chunky bites. And every time that I ate, any time that I had a buildup of emotions in me and I ate or did some kind of relief-seeking behavior, I lost an opportunity to learn something about myself. Once I learned that, it was a very good opportunity to start doing an inventory of things in my life, the resentments, the patterns, you know, to examine the important relationships, the losses, the secrets, the shame-based things, the fantasies that I thought separated me from other people, that knowing that I had a higher power and I could turn my will and my life over to that power no matter what, I felt a feeling of safety to begin to expose some of those things or to learn about them more in depth. One of the things that was very important for me was to write a personal prayer, my own personal third step prayer, to ask my higher power for specific things. Early on, it had a lot to do with, you know, specific ways to stay abstinent. As it moved on, I think it was really more a way of aligning my thoughts. So I just thought I would share this because this is something that I wrote at one point, and it continues to be true. So the prayer that I wrote was, God, walk with me through this day that I feel your presence and know in my heart that you are with me. Go before me during difficult times, so that I will exercise discretion and good judgment when I need it most. Help me to treat other people as I would wish to be treated, and to remember always that without you, I would be lost in a world of addiction. Let me be a shining example to others of the best that OA has to offer, in good times and in bad, knowing that in your world, all things are perfect just as they are. May I do your will always. So that was an exercise that I did some years ago, and it continues to be something that I read and listen to. And I was told that I should write down instances when I've seen God working in my life and share them with my sponsor and other people. And to talk to other people, when I make phone calls, talk to them about the God moments or the times when they've trusted God and felt as if it paid off. So those are just a few of the things that I've learned in my time in program as it relates to step three. And as I said, I find this whole process of turning my will and my life over to God is to be an incredible turning point, because as the steps go forward, the need to further involve God in my life continues to grow as the steps go on until it becomes a constant. With that, I'll close. Again, my name is Neil.
Thank you, Neil. My name is Gloria. I'm a compulsive overeater and a food addict. Today we will be talking about step three. I will be referring to the AA Big Book, our OA 12 and 12, just as Neil did. Just as a reminder, we are self-supporting through our own contribution, even though this is a virtual meeting. Please use special workshop meeting number 82278, that's 82278, when making your contribution. Go to OA.org and click on Contribution. Donations may also be mailed to the World Service Office, Post Office Box 44020, Rio Rancho, New Mexico, 87174-4020. If you have any questions regarding contributions, you may contact the World Service Office at 505-891-2664. Thank you for helping us to carry the message. Okay, and now that we have that administrative bit out of the way, just like Neil, I have basically about 5 minutes to tell my story and then discuss the topic. Again, my name is Gloria. I'm a compulsive overeater and a food addict. I came into OA, I remember the day, it was August 9th, 1999. I have been abstinent since then. I lost 120 pounds in this program and have kept it off for about 14 and a half years. And, you know, I know that sounds great, but as my sponsor always says, it shows you how bad I got. I was thoroughly miserable, hated myself, loved myself. Every day was the same, as you feel. I was always going to stick to my diet, and I never did. It says in our OA 12 and 12 that some of us have a genetic predisposition to obesity. I know that's true of me because I was a third-generation compulsive overeater. I came out of the factory that way. My ethnic background is one where food is the most important thing in life without exception. That's really a very sad sad statement to make, but true. My parents were busy in their own jobs. They didn't really provide any nurturing for me, so I grew up fearful, and food was my best friend. And by the time I was ready to go to college, I really knew I had a problem. Been to diet doctors. I know those of you who are old enough to remember when doctors would dispense amphetamines, which I gladly took. That's certainly one way I could have a very clean house because, well, I'd be going miles, 100 miles an hour on that stuff. But, of course, none of it ever worked, and it seemed that if you were fat, people thought of you as not just fat, but fat, lazy, and stupid. It was all the same, and so I determined that I was going to excel at school. But I was always looking for the answer to my problem. What was the answer? I thought it was academic excellence. That wasn't the answer. I thought it was getting married because nobody would overeat once they got married. That didn't prove to be helpful. That I thought it was a job if I just got the right job. And I got a great job, but I binged every day that I went to work. I just never could find the answer. I tried for the first 50 years of my life to find the answer. And when my son graduated from college and I was supposed to be thin and pretty and I could hardly find anything to fit me and I was over 250 pounds, I was very close to my bottom. That was in May of 1999. And my solution when I got back from his graduation was to keep eating for another whatever few months until I finally was desperate enough to come into OA in August 9th of 1999. And that's where I discovered many things. I discovered that this program, at its heart, for me, my success in this program depends on how seriously I take the third step, where I have to make that decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, if I understand that. I was raised in a religious tradition where I thought God wanted me to be a nun, and I didn't want to be a nun. I apologized to God for that, but I always felt like God was not very happy with me because I didn't want to be a nun. And somewhere along the way, I got smart, thought I was very smart, and I went to college and I went to graduate school, so I was too sophisticated to believe in the God that I had been raised on. And I was basically continuing to flounder till I came into OA. And the first thing I noticed, or not the first thing maybe, but the second thing I noticed, first I noticed the physical recovery in the people I met in the room. The second thing I noticed was the serenity, so many of them. And as they told their stories in this program, that serenity was due to the fact that they had made a decision to turn their life over to the care of a higher power, and that made them happy. And I so much wanted that. I mean, I came in to lose weight, but I wanted that serenity, that special glow that was on their face. So I started working the steps. Of course, in step one, I admitted I was powerless. And so if I'm totally powerless over this addictive substance of mine, this food, then I needed to find some kind of power outside myself if I was going to get well, and I desperately wanted to get well. And one of the first things my sponsor had me read was the doctor's opinion, and there's a quote from that I'd like to read. It says, "Frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. The message which can interest and hold these alcoholic people must have depth and weight. In nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives." And I wasn't quite sure what all that meant, but I got the part about how I was in a program now where I was going to have to recreate my life. My life was going to have to change. If I was going to do this, I had to somehow, whatever I came up with, whatever I was taught, whatever I learned as a way of living, it had to be grounded in a power greater than me. That, to me, is my higher power, which I choose to call God. So step one, I was powerless, but not helpless. I needed to find a power outside myself. And the kind of the answer to that is really in step two, if I come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. And like perhaps many of you, that belief came to me basically based on other people. And I saw that the power of the group as that power. I started to believe that maybe I too could succeed. I could not only lose weight, but gain that serenity and somehow change my life, because I lived a life where I was just drifting. I had a job. I had a wonderful life, a wonderful husband, a wonderful child, a wonderful home. I couldn't see any of that. I was just drifting. I didn't know what to do. I acted on impulse. I had no principles. There was no spirituality in my life whatsoever. And I was very, very unhappy. With my sponsor, I came to step three, and I struggled in this program to get what we call the spiritual connection, the God thing. I was tired of hearing people in a meeting say, oh, yeah, I was on my way to a fast food restaurant, and God took control of my car and turned it around. And that was all well and good if that worked for them, but that sort of thing didn't work for me. I couldn't come to that kind of belief. And so my sponsor told me basically, well, if you could have any higher power you want, what would it be? Make a list of the things you want in a higher power. So I did that, and one of the things that I put on that list was, I wanted a higher power who, if I had a decision to make and I didn't know whether the decision should be yes or no, I wanted either a telephone call or a text message. I didn't want a cryptic answer. I wanted a message that said yes or no. And there were other things, but I put all that on my list. And she said, okay, make that your higher power. And so I tried to carry forward with that. I was still struggling with that. And she said to me, well, I'd like you to read The Spiritual Experience in the back of the Big Book, because I wanted that burning bush that is talked about, but that is not what I got. And so I'd like to read to you a little bit from that spiritual experience in the appendix of the Big Book that helped me. And it says, in the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. And that is what I thought I had to do. Yes, I thought I needed that kind of sudden, overwhelming God in my life. Then it goes on to say, among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. And that is exactly what happened to me. When I looked back on my first year of abstinence, I was able to see how much I had changed, how I had really changed drastically. And I had tried over and over and over again to do something about my eating, which was out of control. I had never been able to do that. And somehow, when I entered OA, a year later, I had lost all the weight I needed to lose. I had friends. I had never had friends before. I wanted to do good things. I no longer rushed into doing something. I would think about what my sponsor had told me and what the principles of the steps involved. It has happened without me realizing it. There definitely was a presence in my life, a presence of God in my life. To me, one of the things that helped me make the decision that I was going to turn my will and my life over to the care of my higher power was taking something in my life that was so personal to me, that thing being my food, what I ate, which I never wanted anybody to know about. When I started giving my food away to my sponsor, that was like a little baby step toward me losing control, toward me giving over something of great importance to me to the care of somebody else. Somebody else was looking at my food and seeing if this was a good way to eat. Somebody else was looking at it and able to tell me if I was, if my portions were right. Something so intimate in my life, I was turning over to someone else. I was giving up that control. And the same thing happened throughout my time with my sponsor when I would tell her about things I was doing or, whatever, whether I would ask her for suggestions. In other words, I was becoming attuned to it not always being about what I wanted or what I thought was right. It was about what somebody else thought. It started out with my sponsor and food and gradually progressed to someone else that is a higher power helping me make my decision. And I remember very distinctly after I had been in the program about 10 or 11 months, I had an evening when I was sure I was going to eat. I wanted to eat desperately, and it was late, and I didn't feel like I could call anyone. And I just got down on my knees, and I said, God, if I am going to stay abstinent, you have to help me. That is the only way that I can get through this. And after that, it seemed that I never in my life after that asked for help that I didn't get. So now I, as a daily practice, when I have decisions to make, I've been taught to pause, pray, to think, and then to act. And if you read pages 86 through 88 in the Aid in the Dig book, this is a wonderful set of instructions on how to, not just how to do prayer and meditation, but how to continue turning my life over to the care of a higher power. By pause, I was someone, Neil mentioned fear, I was someone who absolutely lived in fear constantly. I was so afraid of making mistakes half the time I didn't know what I was afraid of. But now, every day, as part of my discipline, when I get up in the morning, I get on my knees and I pray. I thank my higher power for my abstinence. I ask my higher power to help me continue being abstinent. And I ask my higher power to help me not just to know his will, but to follow it. If you read our pamphlet on Plan of Eating, there's a wonderful discussion of the spirituality that we find in a food plan, that I give up control and place it in the hands of a higher power. Neil mentioned how he had rewritten the third step prayer. I did the same. I think this is a great exercise, so I'd like to read you in closing what I wrote. God, I offer you my heart, soul, thought, spirit, my love, my joy, my working mind, all that I have and all that I am. It is all yours, and I hope you will use me, all of me, in accordance with your plan for me, and however you see fit, without complaint or instruction from me. Take the best of me and make it better and make my life useful. Help me out of my self-centeredness. When my ego wants to take over, shut it down and point me in the direction you want me to follow. I have defects that cause me problems. Please remove them when they interfere with my ability to serve you and to help others. Mainly, God, I ask that you remove my difficulties so others may see what you are capable of, your power and your love, and that they may come to your way of life as they see what you can do with others such as me. Use me as proof that you are the solution to my problem. With all my heart and soul, I know you will never fail me if I seek you. So here are just some suggested questions regarding step three. What is holding you back from turning your will and your life over to a higher power? Is there a food you are holding on to that may be blocking you from your higher power? Rewrite the third step prayer in your own words. With that, we'll open it for sharing or questions.
Can you please repeat the question slower?
Yes. What is holding you back from turning your will and your life over to a higher power? Is there a food you are holding on to that may be blocking you from your higher power? Rewrite the third step prayer in your own words.
Hi, this is Meg. I'm a compulsive overeater, and when I first got to the third step and my sponsor said, we said the third step prayer together, I said, oh, I'm not sure I can do that. And she said, well, how about saying the serenity prayer with thy will not mine be done on the end? And I said, oh, I can do that. So that was my first third step prayer. I also had to check with my higher power that my higher power really cared about what I ate. So I would do tests in order to turn my life and will. I also had to turn over my food and my wage. Sometimes I would be about to eat something, and I would say, okay, HP, if you don't want me to eat this right now, you got to do something. And invariably, something would happen. It took my attention away from the food, and when I got back to the food, I didn't want it anymore. So that made me start to believe that my higher power cared. And the other reason that my higher power cared is because when I'm in the food, my higher power, I'm not listening to anybody, and especially not my higher power. I'm just in that food fog, that special place of just me and the food that doesn't work for me anymore. So I'm really grateful to have a higher power to help me through big decisions and little decisions. There was one time when my husband needed to have a procedure, and I wasn't sure if the time was right, and I asked my higher power for guidance, and it said, yes, now, and I went for it, and it was really good that he did it then because it saved his life. So I'm grateful. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Meg.
This is Marcia. I have an abstinence prayer that I use. Hello?
Okay.
Yeah. And this is real special for me. I'll read it. God, today is a new day for me, and with you I can handle anything. I ask for your protection in case sometime during the day my desire to eat compulsively becomes stronger than my desire to abstain. I ask for your protection today from anyone or anything that would interfere with my abstinence. I know I am powerless over food and that my life can become unmanageable again. I do believe that you will relieve my compulsion and restore my sanity. Please help me to know your will for me today and give me the willingness to carry it out. I turn my will and my life over to you. Please guide me through another day of abstinence. God, I need you. And some days I really emphasize the God, I need you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Chris.
Hi, Chris.
I really like what you shared. I want to say a big thank you to both Neil and Chris. I have a little notebook that I've been keeping notes on these sharings and workshops, so I really appreciate everybody. The first thing I do when I get up in the morning, I say, good morning, God, you know me. This is Chris. I'm a compulsive overeater. I say the first and second, and when I say the third step, I say, made a decision to turn my will, my life, and my food over to the care of God as I understand him. Then I say the third step prayer. And after that, then I remind myself that only with my higher power's help can I remember that nothing tastes as good as abstinence feels. and that no food is worth the anguish of a binge. And my day is bookmarked with many times in between with morning prayer and evening prayer, 10-step work every day. And so I'm just really grateful for this program. This month is my 14th anniversary as well as my belly button birthday. So I have a lot of gratitude. And if anybody's going to be in Nashville next weekend for the Southeast Conference and Assembly, I will see you there. Thank you so much.
I'll be there, Chris. Well, I'll see you.
This is Tina. May I share?
Yes.
Tina, I'm a recovering compulsive overeater, and I'm grateful to be abstinent today. And I want to thank you for this workshop, this whole series. It's been wonderful. Been on every week, or every month, I should say. Step three is particularly special to me in that I got into program 1989. I did not get a sponsor right away, but I knew I belonged, and my recovery started June 15th, 1989, which was when I attended my first OA meeting. I got my sponsor about 6 weeks later, loving, gentle, and kind, just the person I needed who gave me both flexibility and the discipline that I needed. And one of the things that she encouraged was that I attend a step meeting. I did. They were on step three. We read it. We shared. And there was one person in particular who emphasized, turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. And that just has stayed with me. I've been in program almost 26 years. I can see this woman saying it. I emphasize it with newcomers because so many times I hear turn my will and my life over to God, the short version. But turning my will and my life over to the care of God, and again, as I understood him, has been so crucial to me in so many different ways. One, again, my higher power, whom I choose to call God, is loving, is gentle, is kind. It's a spiritual I have, you know, as opposed to my religious, and he's everywhere with me. And so many different times when, whether it's been good or bad, or challenging rather than bad, the thought of turning my will and my life over to the care of God has been so reassuring to me. And I've been allowed to let go of the angst, let go of the situation, knowing that I will be taken care of because I am turning my will and my life over to the care of God as or higher power. This has also helped me so many times in other situations. When my niece, who has a history of had a history of miscarrying when she was pregnant and then, I'm going to say, committed to bed, turning her will and her life over to the care of God, knowing that she would be taken care of. She now has three beautiful children. My father had there were two elderly, got cancer. I was powerless, but because of this third step prayer, not only did I turn my will and my life over to the care of God, I was able to turn my father, his will, him over to the care of God as I understood him. And his past 2 years, the last 2 years, were very powerful, loving, kind for both of us. And it was because of this third step. I am not alone. I can be lonely in a room full of people, but with my higher power, I am never alone, and it is because of this care that I am always receiving wherever I am. And this program, 12 Steps, 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous, has definitely saved my life. I will do anything to protect, preserve, and cherish this program. It is because of moments such as that, spiritual situations such as that. I am just in sacred awe of this program, and I thank you both for sharing your thoughts and experiences on step three. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tina. And we've reached the end. I'd like to remind everyone that according to our seventh tradition, we are self-supporting through our own contribution. Please use special workshop meeting number 82278 when making your contribution. While this workshop has no direct expenses, our seventh tradition reminds us that we are self-supporting through our contribution.
go to OA.org and click on contribution. Thank you for helping us to carry the message. And just as a reminder, this workshop is being was recorded and will be posted on the OA website podcast page. The opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. And it would seem appropriate that we close with the third step prayer. Moment of silence. God, I offer myself to Thee.
I offer myself to Thee to
build with me, do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self.
Relieve me of the bondage of self.
That I may better do Thy will.
Take away my difficulties.
That victory over them may be a witness to those I would help. Of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Thank you, Neil, and thanks everyone for participating, and have a great abstinence day.